Hello, this is Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. The Giller Prize was founded in 1994 by Jack Rabinovich in honour of his late wife, the literary journalist Doris Giller, who passed away from cancer the year before. He enlisted an informal board, including Alice Munro, to put together the award, which recognises excellence in Canadian fiction. Well, I'm delighted to welcome Ilana Rabinovich, the daughter of Jack, the founder of the prize. She's executive director of the award.
They set up a prize that was unlike anything Canada had ever seen. At that point, I think we only had the Governor General's Award, which is a government-endowed prize. And this was to be a private deal. Jack was going to finance it out of his own pocket. They were not going to be politically correct about who they chose, whether it was geopolitically or sexual orientation or anything of that nature. The whole idea, and it remains to this day, was simply to pick the best book. We don't load the jury down with how they must consider the story arc or the character development, or it's just about the best book, which may sound facile, but it's actually worked for these past 25 years. I got involved probably in around 2000, and having come kicking and screaming out of the music business, and learned the ropes, and then started making some changes. And in some instances, they were not to Jack's liking. They were about trying to modernize the prize a little bit, to bring in younger jurors. And then in 2013, we opened up our jury panel to international jurors, which I thought was very important because three Canadian voices, can get a little bit insular. So opening it up to an American, a Brit, an Irish, whomever, gave a much more fulsome tenor to the deliberations, and it has done that. We've done that. We've started this road show, which I began with one city in Toronto, and then we've mapped out cities across the country, and then we decided to come to London, and this year for the first time, New York. It was 2008 when we partnered with Scotiabank on a handshake and a letter of agreement. It was very informal because they really were the right bank. They had a great interest and an investment in the arts, and they saw the Giller Prize as a way of helping them acknowledge their interest in Canadian arts and letters. And what they've done ever since is let us run with what we want, even though they're underwriting everything with great, great generosity.
I then turned to Nick Barley. He's the director of the Edinburgh International Book Festival and has judged many prizes, including the Man Booker International Prize in 2017. I asked him why literary awards are important.
From a reader's point of view, these days, as literary criticism suffers and diminishes really in importance in the world, prizes are becoming more and more crucial to help readers decide which books they're going to read. To be shortlisted for a major prize is crucial for an author to get that visibility, and to win a prize is now more than ever a life-changing experience for writers. And I think the Scotiabank Giller Prize in Canada has a huge reputation. It's a really, really important prize in Canada, and increasingly it's becoming important elsewhere in the world.
And I wonder if these particular books talk to us about the state of the world. What do they tell us?
It speaks about human existence. In a number of these novels really are about existentialism, about wondering who we are, where we are in the world. Several of them are set actually at the turn of the new millennium. So rather than speaking directly about political issues which are unfolding in these weeks and in this year, they're more generally speaking about what it is to be a human alive in the beginning of the 21st century. So I like the way that they move away from the immediate political realities that we're living through right now. They move off the front pages of our internet feeds or our newspapers, and they move into a kind of sense of what it is to be a person existing alongside other people.
I then turned to the writer Richard Beard, who judged the prize in 2017. I asked him what judges are looking for in a potential winner.
Well, I think being one of the non-Canadian judges, I was coming into it very fresh and thinking, I want to really find something that I don't think I've found anywhere else in world literature, something which I feel could only come from Canada. And obviously that's a huge thing to ask for, and you don't know what that is until you see it. I mean, it's not just the setting, it's not the characters, it's a kind of a sensibility, really. And that's what I was hoping to find, and I think that's what we did find as well. Mm-hmm.
So would you say that there is a national characteristic that comes through in the work?
Well, there's so much diversity, I don't think you could say that. There's not one thing which comes across. But there is a sense of openness, there's a sense of being prepared to engage with the challenges of multiculturalism, of immigration, of very diverse populations, of divides across class, across wealth barriers. And I think that was really refreshing. It was a very new way of looking at that. It didn't have the abrasiveness which perhaps comes across in American literature sometimes. Mm-hmm. It didn't have the smugness which comes across in British literature. And I think it was something altogether new, which is very refreshing for me to read.
Do you think that prize outcomes are hugely dependent on the makeup of the jury? So if you had the exact same writers, but two different juries, they would come up with completely different winners?
I think they would come up with, if you look at this year's shortlist, which is very strong, just as our shortlist was very strong last year as well, if you look at both those shortlists, I think over 50% of the books would be on both shortlists, whoever the jurors were. They're just some very, very strong books which are candidates every year, and I think they would come through every year. I think there's always space for one or two outliers, and that's a good thing in a book prize because, again, that rewards the diversity of the Canadian literary scene. I do think it's good to change the judges. I also think this quite recent development where there are three Canadian judges and two non-Canadian judges is very helpful. It stops anyone thinking, well, the Canadian literary world is very small, very insular, and therefore there'll be a kind of personal element to the judging. I think the two outside judges ensure that it is an objective view and we try and find the best book of that year.
So, what is the best book of 2018? Let's meet the shortlisted writers.
I'm Patrick DeWitt. I was born in 1975 in British Columbia, Canada. I currently live in Portland, Oregon in the U.S. My book, French Exit, is my fourth novel. And it tells the story of the Price family, Frances Price and her adult son, Malcolm. Frances, in her youth, had been known as a great beauty and wit. The book talks of the phase after the glamour has passed, so it's a story about Frances' reconciliation with her past and her her take on the future, which is quite a bleak take.
Now, you've won several prizes before. In fact, you've won the Governor General's Literary Award for Fiction, the Rogers Writers Trust Fiction Prize, and you've been shortlisted both for this prize and for the Man Booker.
That's true.
So are prizes important?
I think prizes are deeply important for the simple fact that they bring obscure writers into center stage, and these prizes get the books into the homes of strangers. And so that's a priceless thing to take part in. And speaking from my own experience, in 2011, when Sisters Brothers was on both the Booker and the Giller Prize shortlist, I just had the sense that something changed quite drastically. So it's just the most difficult thing in the world, really, to get an unknown author to the forefront of any sort of discussion about literature. So anything that can sort of shorten that trek or can make it happen as quickly as the prizes do, I think it's just a thoroughly positive experience.
Peter McCambridge is the translator of Songs for the Cold of Heart. It's by Eric Dupont. Tell us about Eric.
Eric is one of the best-known authors working in Quebec at the minute. He's kind of the voice of a new generation, a new wave of Quebec authors. So this novel is the translation of La Fiancée Américaine, which sold 60,000 copies in Quebec, which is ridiculously well-known in Quebec. It's a favorite Quebec novel, both in terms of it's something that people identify with, it's something people are very familiar with. So for us, it's kind of the perfect novel to end up as a finalist for the Giller Prize. It would be a worthy first novel from Quebec to be the first novel in translation to win the Giller Prize in its 25-year history.
Tell me about the book.
It's kind of hard to describe. It's long. It's 240,000 words, it's 600 pages. It's long in terms of historical span, too. It begins in small-town Quebec in 1919. We end up in Rome after the fall of the Berlin Wall. In between, there's a couple of world wars. We go to Nagasaki. This is kind of Dupont's thing. He plays off parochial life in Quebec and childhood events against the world canvas of history.
Now, you translated it from French. Is there a big market for literature not in English in Canada?
Well, I translated it and I also published it. We published it. It's called QC Fiction. It's an imprint which belongs to Barrica Books in Montreal, which is kind of a one-man operation. It's a very small publisher in Montreal. There's a growing market, I would say, for Quebec literature and translation. In recent years, Quebec literature has been getting better on the French side. And the translations have also been getting better. So it's kind of a good time for a focus to fall on a book such as this. Mm. And obviously the Giller effect has brought a lot more attention in the book than we would have gotten had it come out without being longlisted and then shortlisted.
Mm. And of course it being in translation is a wonderful thing in terms of your sales elsewhere.
So at the minute we're only published in Quebec, well we're published in Canada, out of Montreal, and unlike the other books on the shortlist, we don't have a different publisher in the United States or in Britain. We have worldwide rights and we're aiming for an international market. But this is why I chose this book, because it's an international book. It's written by a Quebecer, but it's not necessarily about Quebec. Part of the book starts in Quebec, but it's very much a platform for an international saga set against world events.
Essie Adujan is the author of Washington Black, and in fact she's won this prize once already, back in 2011, with her novel Half-Blood Blues. That did incredibly well and won a number of prizes. Tell us about the life of that book before we speak about your most recent work.
Yeah, so Half-Blood Blues was a novel about a group of American and German jazz musicians in Paris and Germany shortly before World War II. They've had a great time playing during the Weimar days, and then they have to figure out what to do now that they've been banned publicly from playing publicly. And that novel had such a strange route to publication. It was purchased by Serpent's Tail in the UK, but it was universally rejected everywhere else, and nobody would buy it. And then, by great luck and good fortune, it ended up on the Man Booker shortlist, and that changed everything.
And you've just done it again, because your latest book, Washington Black, is not only shortlisted for this prize, for the Giller Prize, but was also on the Man Booker list.
Yes, it's been quite an amazing few years in my writing career. Quite a turnaround from what was going on before, so I feel very blessed.
Tell us about Washington Black.
Washington Black is a novel about an 11-year-old field slave who's known no other life but one of great brutality and suffering. And so he's utterly shocked to find himself taken to live in the quarters of his new master's brother, who's a man called Christopher Wilde, or Titch. And Washington is completely surprised to discover that Wilde is like no other white man who he's ever been in contact with before. Wilde he's a gentleman scientist, so he's an explorer, he's an inventor, he's a naturalist illustrator, and he's also an abolitionist. And it's through his removing Washington from fieldwork and teaching him to draw and to read that Washington begins to have his first kind of stirrings of personhood and sense of agency.
Now, you've been on a road tour for this, but of course, right before that, you were touring for the Booker Prize. I mean, this has just been the most intense year.
It has been a very intense year. I've never published a book like this where there's been, you know, just so much to do around it from the outset. I think the Man Booker longlist was announced before the book was even released, and so that was a huge boost, obviously, going into to start the publication process. It was an amazing way to start things off.
You've won this prize before, so you know what might await you.
Yeah, winning this prize just made all the difference for my career in Canada. You know, I suddenly had a large readership, which I certainly hadn't had before, and that was enormous for me. I think that's what every writer wants, is for people to be reading their books and talking about their books, and you know, even if people hate those books, you know, just to be part of the conversation is huge. And also it's allowed me to focus on my writing for the last couple of years, and that's been very useful, obviously, in writing Washington Black.
I'm talking to Taya Lim, who is the author of An Ocean of Minutes. Taya, tell me about your life. You're Canadian.
Yes, so I was born in Canada, but I actually grew up mostly in Singapore, so I sort of always have one foot in either place in a way.
And your writing career?
Well, it was really more trying to get away from it, I think, because I'm somewhat pragmatic and it didn't seem like a good idea, you know, so I was always sort of trying to do something else. So I worked as a grant writer, I worked in communications, I worked in restaurants, but eventually I sort of had to give in.
And you've been writing ever since?
In a way. So I published a novella about 11 years ago. And after that, I thought, well, maybe I should actually give this a go. So probably since then, I did a Master's of Fine Arts at the University of Houston. And then when I moved back to Toronto, that was when I started working sort of part-time on my novel while I was also working part-time.
Tell me about the book.
So in An Ocean of Minutes, Polly decides to take a job elsewhere in order to get medical care for her lover Frank, who is deathly ill. But the job is not just in another place, it's in another time. It's 12 years in the future, and when she gets to the future, she's actually even 5 years later than she thought she was going to be, and Frank is nowhere to be found, and so the book is about her trying to find him.
There are so many contemporary issues that come up in it.
Yeah, and that was sort of funny. That wasn't what I set out. I was just really interested in writing about bereavement and really the fact that we love so recklessly, even though bereavement is around us. Like, I was sort of curious about how we do that. I mean, it kind of surprised me when it actually turned into a novel about migration. And there's a lot about the politics of work. Yeah, there's a lot, I think, about also the way that sort of migrants are treated. But also, I was really just interested in what does it mean to be a time-bound being? And I think that's sort of the through line that works throughout the book.
Our final shortlister is Sheila Hetty. Her book is Motherhood. Tell me about your writing career.
I started off with a book of short stories and a novella and, you know, just sort of very fictional worlds. And my last few books have been more, I suppose, on the boundary of fiction and nonfiction, my life, my imagination. They aren't so clearly any genre. And, yeah, so Motherhood fits into that. Mm-hmm. The basic narrative is of a woman trying to decide whether or not to have a child, and her perspective really is from the point of view of someone who pretty much doesn't want a child, but it's just very hard for her to say that to herself. She's not sure. This is a subject on which women are told to doubt their intuitions, especially if they don't want. You know, it's you'll regret it, or you don't know, or you'll change your mind. So it's not so simple to know what you want always. So it's sort of an interior charting of several years of thinking through this problem.
Do you have children?
No.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I more than the character, this was not ever something that I saw myself doing. It even still feels incredibly bizarre and alien. I don't understand why people do it. Yeah, there's some fundamental cellular way in which I don't get it. I think I wrote this book to try to understand why. Like, how can I be a woman and it feels so alien to me? What's wrong with me? I feel like actually probably a lot of people go ahead and have children without any thought process behind it. Not that you need to have a thought process behind it, but I think that it's worthwhile to think it through whether you do it or not. And I sort of wanted to model a thinking through of this question and of this huge existential decision. You know, the question of whether to bring somebody into the world or not is a very serious question. And I think it's a subject that we culturally don't think about because it's biologically natural. It's great. We want it, you know, mazel tov, you have a child. But I wanted to show that it can be a problem. It doesn't have to, it isn't always an easy step.
It's quite a contentious issue. How has it been received in Canada?
Well, I think, I mean, there aren't any other books, as far as I can tell, that deal with ambivalence around this question. And I think the book has been really welcomed. There are some critics, female critics, who have had troubles with the book, but can you do?
Before we find out who's won the prize, we'll speak to one of the judges this year, the author Philip Henscher. What is the judging criteria?
The judging criteria is a good book. I think that the only thing to do when you judge a literary prize is just to say, not only do I think this is a good book, but am I myself actually enjoying it? Not do I think that people would admire me for recommending this book, or it raises very interesting questions. I once judged a prize, not this one, when all the other jurors kept saying of terrible books, this raises very interesting questions. And I would just sit in the corner going, well, what are these questions? And what are the answers to the questions? And if there aren't any answers, then were they questions in the... you know what I mean. But this was great because it was a nation's literary production over the year. And I don't suppose there are very many people, even in Canada, that read 104 Canadian novels all published in the same year. And it's a very interesting exercise. You see what's interesting novelists in a particular place at a particular time, and you see the difference between the novelists that are writing because they want some kind of validation or approval, or and the ones who are really kind of enjoying themselves. And it's such a clear distinction. And there were a lot of really, really very good books here.
Do you see any kind of theme in terms of nationality? Is there a particular Canadian way of writing?
Well, interestingly, I would say that the Canadianness is changing. There's a lot of interest in new Canadians telling their stories, writers from first and second generation immigrants telling the narrative of the places that they've come to. And some of them were the sort of novels that are only really going to interest the writer's family, but you know, none the worse for that. Imagine the joy of having a novelist in your family telling the story. But some of them were really, you know, were really reached towards universality. And also, the good thing that is arising, I think that there is a real interest in very old Canadians. In other words, Canadian writers from Indigenous communities. The two that we longlisted, one Tanya Tagak, who's an Inuit writer and performer, and the other Joshua Whitehead, who is a two-spirited writer from, in other words, something like what we would call a writer between sexual identities, from an Indigenous people. Both of them taking very different approaches. And it was interesting to be in Toronto when the shortlist was announced and to see just how much interest there was among ordinary readers in these two writers. Now, I know this because actually a lot of ordinary readers came up to me in bookshops and even once in the street and started berating me for leaving Tanya Tagak off. And I kept saying, it wasn't me, I was just one of a committee. But, you know, there is a real passionate interest in these different stories.
In terms of it not being you, how united were the judges in the choice of this final shortlist? And was it quite a scratchy jury, as they can be sometimes?
There was a joyous degree of disagreement, put it like that. Of course, we'll all have different tastes. There's some books that I passionately wanted to get onto the long list. I just couldn't persuade anybody to go along with me. I think that we have come up with a very strongly flavoured shortlist, and inevitably, you know, not so much on the shortlist, but certainly on the long list, there were, you know, books here and there that individual jurors said, I'm sorry, but I just can't stand this book. But I rather like a book that I can't stand, if you see what I mean. I like a book that gets under my skin and irritates me. I think that a book that is doing that to a reader is doing something rather powerful. There's nothing that was totally devoid of literary merit that got onto the long list. Still lets the shortlist, of course. But there might be some that rub an individual reader up the wrong way. And certainly, you know, a member of the jury is no different to any other reader.
So tell me about the shortlist.
It wasn't hard to come up with a strong shortlist. There were three or four novels that would definitely have made the shortlist in a less strong year, I would say.
In terms of reading the book and actually judging the prize, presumably you read a book more than once it's on the shortlist. Obviously, everybody's read it at least a couple of times. I imagine by that point, the plot is kind of unimportant because you know what's going to happen. That's no longer what's exciting about the book.
Well, oddly, it's almost the other way around, in that when you're reading the first time round, you're winnowing down from a very large number. And so in a way, the first reading is actually to see the level of competence, really, handling of material, the writing skill, the characterization, all these kind of technical things. And if a book is competent and obviously a little bit more than that, then it advances. And if not, not. So In a way, that first period, it's almost like a triage, really. And it's in last stages, oddly. I've always found the second or third reading, when they get to shortlist stage, that you sort of have the leisure. I mean, I'm reading these five novels in over 2 weeks rather than over 3 days, as you know, at this stage. It's only really at this stage that you can really surrender yourself to the pleasure of reading and just see, what would I think of this book if I were just a punter who has shelled out $20 or whatever for this novel? Would I enjoy it? Would I curl up on the sofa? Or would, you know, Deal or No Deal on the television seem more attractive?
And finally, the winner of the 2018 Scotiabank Giller Prize is...
Essie Adugin!
Essie, congratulations. I'm so pleased for you.
Thank you so much.
Just a quick reminder of Essie's credentials, if you like. She's already won this prize once. Back in 2011, she won it for her novel Half-Blood Blues. It was also a finalist for the Man Booker Prize, the Governor General's Literary Award for Fiction, the Rogers Writers Trust Fiction Prize, and the Orange Prize for Fiction. Her new book is Washington Black. That also made the shortlist for the Man Booker. Essie, this is an incredible achievement, not once, but twice.
Yes, I'm it's completely surprised to have it all be happening again. I had no expectation of it, and yeah, I'm utterly thrilled.
So the first time it happened, of course, it was all new and exciting. This time, you sort of know what to expect. Is it just as overwhelming?
You know, it is, especially with the Giller Prize. When I won it back in 2011, it was just, you know, you showed up for the ceremony in the evening and then they handed out the prize, but they've since added a whole touring component to the prize. So we had like a 7-city tour, including New York and London, and it was quite wonderful because you got to know your fellow nominees like really well, and we bonded, and you know, we're quite good friends, and it's just, the prize just feels much bigger. So it was totally overwhelming to win it.
When you won it the first time with Half-Blood Blues, of course, every writer has a relationship with their book, and a very special relationship, particularly when it catapults you into fame and success like that. How do you feel about that book now that Washington Black has also done equally as well?
I'm so proud of that book. I worked so hard on that book, and it had had such a rocky reception up until the time that it, made it onto the Booker shortlist and then ultimately winning the Giller Prize. I'm still very proud of that book and feel very close to it. And I have a different relationship with Washington Black. It was, you know, the conception of it was so different. The terms in which I was writing it were so different, but, I feel very close to the material.
Because this prize is so big, it's likely that most big readers in Canada will, by the end of the year, have read your book. That's an enormous achievement.
It really is. And when you're writing something, you hope that it will be read, but of course you can't, you know, this is not something that's within your control. And so, yeah, I'm delighted that the book will reach a larger readership.
So the long list, shortlist and the winner were selected by an esteemed 5-member jury panel. Canadian writers Kamal Al-Sulaili, who was the chair of the jury, Maxine Bailey and Heather O'Neill, along with the American writer John Freeman and the English novelist Philip Hensher. Kamal, you chaired the jury, so perhaps you could tell me a little bit about the judging process, because getting it down from over 100 in the end to just one, was there something specific that you were looking for? What was it about Washington Black that really spoke to the jury members?
I think, you know, we were 5 different people in the room, and I'd be lying if I said we were all looking for the same thing. But I can say that Washington Black is the book that combined what we all were looking for. For example, I was looking for something that experiments a little bit with genre. That was really essential to me. We did have a woman in the jury, Maxine Bailey, whose background is from the Bahamas, and and she related to it perhaps, you know, because of the fact that it isn't a slave narrative, that it's finally, we don't need another slave narrative, and let's do something different with Black life stories other than a slave narrative. I think for the writers, I don't want to speak for the other writers necessarily, but it was a combination of the relationship, the central relationship. It's a very ambiguous relationship because it is a master and slave, at least formally it is, but it's also a friendship. And it's a friendship that has all the hallmarks of a very strong emotional bond, including abandonment and Washington Black asking and trying to find out why he was abandoned by this man that took him on. So it was, I think I can say that we were all so engrossed by this pursuit of this friendship between two people who came from completely different worlds and being set in a different time, being set in the early, in the 1830s, was quite, and being and set in the Bahamas, in Canada, in the U.S. and Morocco. So it wasn't the classic Black slave narrative of the U.S. slavery.
It is, of course, the second time that Essie has won this prize. And I wonder what it says about the changing nature of the ethnicity of Canadians and what people are reading, the fact that this Black woman has won now twice.
That's a very good question, but this was a jury that was not even, that was not looking at any of the factors that normally, that I would say normally other juries look into, the ethnic backgrounds of the writers, the gender balance, the sexuality. It's a jury that just basically rewarded what we thought was the best book on the shortlist. The fact that Essay is Black, obviously because she did write a story with the Black main character, so it wasn't that we could not see that. But to me, the fact that she was Black was, I can honestly say, it was not a factor. It was just the best book. It was the strongest story. It was the best realized narrative. That's what we ultimately went for. And maybe, like other critics and other chroniclers of Canadian literature will talk about why, her race and her skin color.
Tell me about the standard of the entrance across the board.
It was high, but for a book to make it to our long list, we did have impossibly high standards. I mean, we did select the very best. But I've done juries before, and five different people in the same room may have chosen different books, may not have agreed on our choices. Four of our shortlisted books did not appear on any other shortlist in Canada. The only sort of common thread was Essay's book that appeared on one other shortlist. We selected books that just spoke to us. And were they the best book of the year? I don't know. But they were the best book that this jury thought they were the best book of the year.
Finally, Kamal, how important is the Scotiabank Giller Prize within the landscape of Canadian literature and publishing?
Huge, huge. It's kind of the Booker times three or more. Canada is a small country, 36 million people. This was, televised on national television, broadcast live on national television. It comes in just 5 weeks before Christmas, usually, or 5 or 6 weeks before Christmas. The winning book and the shortlist is probably what most people buying books end up buying as presents. So that's on the kind of the commercial end. But it's for a number of readers who are much, either selective or are very cautious about what they read, and they may probably read three or four books a year or more, is that it kind of provides, the long list particularly, provides a kind of a guidance to what they should read for the next 12 months until the next long list is published.
So, I mean, a real influence then on the reading public.
It is. I mean, and not just on the reading public, but the authors who are, I mean, two of the authors on our shortlist were probably unknown to most Canadians. Eric Dupont, outside of Quebec, he has in English Canada, he has probably no recognition. And Taya Lim, who is, I think this is, she has written a novella before, this is her debut novel. So they're now launched into the rest of Canada now knows who they are, and their careers will probably take off just based on the nomination alone.
So what's next for you, Essie?
I'm going to get some rest. It's been, I've been touring almost nonstop since the beginning of September. I did a UK tour, and I did a US tour, and very extensive Canadian tour. And I just feel like it's time for me to get into a pair of pajamas and live in them and spend some time with my kids.
Well, we're all looking forward to the next book.
Yes, I have a general idea of what I'd like to write, but it's still very vague and hazy, but I'm looking forward to coming back into work.
Congratulations to the winner, and thanks to all at the Scotiabank Giller Prize who made this edition of the show possible. Listen out for future episodes to hear more in-depth interviews with some of those shortlisted authors. You've been listening to Meet the Writers, thanks to the production team of George McDonough, Christy Evans and Barbara Mamioni. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.